Christmas to all of the listeners from the Scapones and their Sound Off podcast show. Keep it Ska. Season's greetings to you all.
We're getting you down.
The news depressing you.
Get a load of the Scapones Sound Off podcast
now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Scapone Sound Off. It's a Christmas special, this one, and we've got a very special man in the house. It's a Christmas special. This is episode 10 of the Scapone Sound Off podcast, because guess who's our guest? It's Nick Hammond! King Welsh.
Nick Welsh. occasionally King Hammond if I'm doing a gig.
Nick Welsh.
I can't even remember when I did that last.
A man that has a absolutely astonishing career in music. How many years now?
Too many.
Come on.
First professional gig 1977, so 43 years. That's 43 years, and I'm still sitting under a blanket in my house freezing cold because I'm following the science of opening the dorm windows.
Don't even get me started.
I feel like Peter Lorre. I'm following the science.
Oh, Peter Lorre is brilliant. I love Peter Lorre. So, how are you doing? Considering, I mean, obviously,
how am I doing?
Well, the thing is that this obviously you're a professional musician, so gigging and everything else is your job, and that's how you get paid and what have you.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And I remember we was talking a bit back, and I think you said your last gig was December last year, so it's a year ago.
My last gig with the Rude Boy Mafia was December, I think maybe the 18th or the 20th or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last time. And I did a one-off little appearance with a band in Oxford in January. Mm. Just sort of 4 or 5 songs guest appearance. And since then, you know, absolutely nothing. And I've got nothing in my diary until at least April.
And let's start
to a conversation.
Yeah.
The baby's coming around tomorrow. And then I've got the great stuff. But yeah, so I haven't. So... I haven't worked. So I've had absolutely.
What I want the world to know what it's been like being a professional musician in these weird times that we've been in.
Absolutely terrible. If you're a professional musician like me, for instance, this is what I do. I do gigs when I can, if I want to do them, if they appeal to me, if I think that people will appreciate, you know, a set of basically my own songs that have been written in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I do the occasional, maybe old one of mine, but so that part of it, so that's gone. That's gone. You know, and I understand why. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I understand why. So then there's the other side, which I seem to be quite busy, and that's releasing new songs and releasing new material.
Well, I was just going to say, I think you've probably been the most prolific. In fact, the most prolific out of everything. Not just Sky Reggae. I mean, everything that's been going. This year
new releases. They got to 12, and I thought, that's nice. And then I came up with this other song, Keep On Dreaming. So I wanted it to be an EP. Then it was 13, and if you know how OCD I am and mental,
yes,
then
yes,
it had to be 14.
Yes, I'm allowed to do that. I do it.
But a live what I call official bootleg. It's good. It's good stuff. But yeah, so I write songs. Most days, and when I write a song, I don't just put them away. I want to go and record them.
Of course you do, yeah.
And, you know, and people say to me, oh, you went to work. And let me get this straight now. When I don't have a studio in my house, I sing songs into a phone. I then take them to a studio, which I have to pay for. All the music I make, I've had to pay for. Now, I insist on doing little small runs because I want it to feel special for the people to buy the music.
Absolutely, yeah.
But that... It's not financially viable to get all the money you've laid out.
No.
So I'm recording at a loss. I know it sounds ridiculous.
Well, it doesn't sound ridiculous because, I mean, at the same time, you've also got living costs, haven't you?
Well, I've got living costs. I live in the centre of London.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's just expensive, you know, recording and stuff like that. And I play, luckily, I play mostly everything myself. So I don't really have to pay for other musicians.
Yeah.
So that's one bonus. And I love doing it all myself, to be honest. It's nice to have the occasional guest musician or singer in, but yeah. And so, yeah, I'm paying out. I will never, because of like releasing, say, 200 copies or 100 copies, even sometimes, or 500, whatever, it will not cover the cost of what I pay out for recording. It may cover the cost of manufacturing the record.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
But it's still there. But you know what? At the minute, I wouldn't have it any other way. Next year, I'm thinking maybe, because I'm recording the new album right now.
You are indeed.
I'm thinking maybe someone else could do it, you know. Because sometimes I worry that because there's two things I worry about. That.
Well, do you think if you the good thing about doing somebody, I mean, like you said, it's a double-edged side, it's a double coin, isn't it? Double-sided coin, because if you're in control of your artist and your work and everything, you remain in control. But the other side is you then can have a little bit less pressure, can't you, if someone takes it on?
Well, no, the thing that worries me is not worries me, because A, I want to make it clear that I make music for myself.
Yeah, of course.
Every song I write usually is about me, my life, or what I think about certain things happening in life. And so I do it. And if other people buy it and like it, that's brilliant. That's I love them for it. I totally appreciate it. But, you know, it's like sometimes I think because, like, for say, for instance, I've released 14 CDs.
Yeah.
If nobody else is releasing any, or not releasing a lot, I start to think, do people think, well, they can't be that good then? How can he do so many? That's one of my problems, I think, of, you know. Uh-huh. And the other is sometimes I think maybe I should try and get a deal with a company, you know.
Yeah.
A legitimate record company. Yeah, yeah. Because sometimes it looks better, I think, that you're wanted by, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, well, that makes sense.
When I did a book because I thought, yeah, well, it shows that people do want you. You can't keep everything yourself. But it has to be a record company has to at least show me that they can do, and I don't really give them the biggest push, but they can do more than me. There might be a few trainers.
Well, that's their job, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it used to be. You used to get advanced, blah, 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 trade ads, videos made.
Yeah, the lot, yeah.
It seems to be happening. Certainly, I don't know, maybe it does for some bands. I don't know. Maybe bands, the big end of the league. Yeah, I don't know, like the Scapones or something like that. they might get
you're
something.
You're so funny.
Specials Madness, they've all got their thing. I mean, the Specials released a record, was it last year, wasn't it?
Encore, yeah.
I don't really remember seeing a video up there of the band or anything.
What do you mean, as in promotion, or what do you mean?
No, yeah, like the video of the band performing whatever the.
There was some animated. There was these like almost Monty Python-esque videos, wasn't there? The release of all the tracks.
You've done them.
No, I'm not that good.
I seriously thought did it have lyrics and stuff on it?
Yeah, yeah, no, it's not me, mate. Unfortunately, no, that's Ireland doing that.
Wow.
No. They were like Monty Python-esque things. I wish I had. I'd been paid well for it.
No, you know, but like, you know, so I don't know what goes on anymore. I don't know what counts as big sales anymore.
Well, this is it. I mean, the thing is, it's times have changed so much that it's, the stats and stuff, you know, I mean, it's what you used to have to sell once over means nothing anymore, does it? I mean,
I mean, I've heard some companies of people say involved in the ska reggae genre, and I was shocked at how little it was.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I was really shocked, and so I thought, oh, I'm doing okay, really, you know. And I like doing that, and I like owning everything you do, and it's all personal. They're all your little babies and songs.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But maybe next year might be a time. And the new album's sounding great as well.
Well, this is what I was just going to say to you. I mean, I've heard bits of it. And obviously, the one thing I like about you as an artist is the fact that, you don't really care. I mean, you can move around fluid in the ska and reggae genre and stuff, but you can take that to another level. Do you know what I mean?
I just do whatever I think feels right for the song. Mm. I like to keep it somewhere. So there's some tip of the hat to the people that support
me.
There'll be an offbeat keyboard, an offbeat guitar. But I'm never going to go and do it the other way. Since I've come back, I first started doing King Hammond, as you know, 1986.
Yeah.
And then came back in 2010, did it. Released over 150 new songs since 2010. And I like most of them. Some of them I think, maybe that was just you're doing it for the fans, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you
know. What I mean. Yeah.
Going to be your winner with it, but that's very rarely, you know.
I know. But I
can't do that. And as time goes by, I mean, when I first started doing it in 2010, the agreement was with my son. He said, why don't you do King Hammond again? It's because I said, well, you've got to be bassist in the band.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was the deal we had. And he said, oh,
he was for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was good. He was brilliant. But the thing we said, he goes, oh, I thought you were just going to be doing songs about pussy. I said, no. You had quite a bit of that in the 80s, but I was like 22 or whatever.
You're a kid, yeah.
And at the time, I think maybe I was nearing 50 or whatever. I goes, it'd be disgusting. And, you know, it's not the same thing, you know. When I originally started King Hammond, you know.
I was just going to ask you what I was just going to ask you there was, for people that don't know. I mean, you've been in all these bands. You've been in, was it The Dead? Is it The Dead? The Clique?
The Dead was
Cabbage and Bollocks, which is the best name in the fucking world ever.
That was we did some recording. We did about 3 gigs, I think.
Brilliant. Well, like, you've got recordings, haven't you?
Yeah. I've got recordings of everything.
Well, what about a Nick Welsh anthology at some point?
Yeah,
and I mean, you know, warts and all, you know, You've got to put on the studio. You've got to put on live. You've got to put on studio. You've got to put on demos.
I know. I've got all that, and I would like to do that. You know, but it's like I don't want to have to put this on certain songs, but it's quite like humorous stuff. I hate it. Like, one of my favourite TV stations is called Talking Pictures.
I love that. Yeah.
I'm rewatching. I mean, although I've got them all on DVD and Blu-ray, so I still watch them. I've been watching Budgie.
Oh, yeah, Budgie.
Which is brilliant. It's a lot better than I remember it. And then it comes up, you know, these were recorded in 1971, 1972, so people's attitudes and whatever.
Changed.
Why'd you have to put that? You know it's recorded then.
You don't need telling.
And they still edit little words out and stuff like that. But, you know, so some of the stuff that you do back then, like, for instance, my favourite song in the Dead was a song called, it was a 12-bar song, like a rockabilly one, called I Want to See a Corpse. He went, I don't believe she's dead, you know. I want to see her corpse. I want to see her corpse. But because she's in her grave, it don't mean that she's dead. She could be lying in her grave because she's mental in the head. I don't believe she's dead, you know. Boom, da, ba, boom, boom. I want to see her corpse. You know, and I'm not sure.
Plus.
You know, I'm not sure. You know, people, they want to complain about anything these days.
They do, really, unfortunately.
You know, my gran died 50 years ago. She's dead, you know.
No, she's still dead.
I see things that annoy me, like you know, when you're looking at Facebook, and there'll be someone, and say someone famous dies, an actor or pop star, whatever, and they may immediately make jokes about the people who've all got families and stuff. Not that they're going to see what someone said.
No, I know.
And then the next day you'll see, I love you, Nan. I know it's been 38 years, but, you know. They've got families too, so, you know. But
right, listen.
People want you to apologise for everything.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's right. So, I don't, you know, I think you should, you know, people should have their own levels of no. You know, if you're watching something from the 80s downwards, you know it's going to be different. It's going to be different, isn't it? But we're going off topic. So what I was going to say was, you're all in these bands.
I love a topic, mate.
I like Lion Bar. Double Decker. But, we're going back to the Oranges of King Hammond show. So you've been all these bands, obviously, and obviously you had a great stint. And for my personal opinion, revived the revived Bad Manners when they needed it. And then...
I had a chance of doing that before, and I didn't. But then eventually when I started playing gigs, I was quite shocked. It was like six people in Scarborough. I mean, literally, that was a gig I remember, six. I remember going along the seafront with Fatty in a horse and cart or something.
Yeah, the horse and cart.
Top hat on, he looked like W.C. Field.
But
the gigs, they wouldn't, you know, there was not a lot of people there.
No, I remember seeing you in the early days, and there must have been 20, 30 people there, if that. You know, that was in West Yorkshire somewhere, yeah.
And I think, like, a lot. I went to school with, you know, 95% of the band. So,
Because you were at Woodbury Down, wasn't it? With all of them lot. So how did you not get in the band? I assume you would have been in the band.
I was 3 years younger.
Oh, that's a star. Oh, well, there you go.
Band. When I was in the Dead playing the Roxy and the Vortex and all the places, Fatty and Lewin, all people used to come to see us. Yeah. And then when they started that band, Bad Manners, it was originally called Stoop Solo and the Sheets.
Well, they weren't the ska band, were they?
No, not at all. And to me, I mean, at the same time, it was like, you know, I used to go see The Clash. I must have seen The Clash 60 times or The Damned or whatever. When Bad Manners was a pub band, just playing the local pubs, to me, that was the best band I'd ever seen. It was just so funny. It was like R&B, bit of comedy.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. Oh, such a fantastic band. And then...
Do you think changing into a ska band, do you think it ruined them? You do.
Yeah.
And why did they go down that road?
No, but not really in a way, because they went on to make some great records and made a lot of people happy. Yeah. So that didn't run. But for my own personal thing, I remember I hadn't seen anyone in the band for a while. I'd been doing stuff, bad stuff. And anyway, remember bumping into Fat in the Street. He says, we're playing tonight at this place called Chats Palace in Hackney. It was like a community centre.
Yeah.
I said, oh, I'll come down. It was like a Saturday night. Hadn't seen him. And then I saw that a few had suits on, and all of a sudden he was doing Double Barrel. And I was like, what's that? What happened to the Milky Bar Kid or whatever it was, on covers of like Dr. Feelgood songs or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a song called Doug used to do called Cheese and Pickle Blues, where I think it was like a 12-bar thing, and he used to put it into the cheese into a pickled onion glass and shake it. I just thought it was brilliant. It was sort of Bonzo-ish and all that. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was like the best band. And then when it changed, and then getting signed up, I was amazed.
Did you ever find, what was the reason for the change?
Got but what EMI after us. Yeah. Or Magna. And I said, well, obviously you're doing EMI.
Yeah.
Gone to Magna.
Why did they take that jump to Ska though? Do you know?
I've no idea. You'd have to ask Fatty.
That'll happen.
That's just my personal opinion.
I I'd heard this from somebody else before. I can't remember who it was, but a few years ago. They said,
when the bands, all the two-time things, well, they're all brilliant, special selects, everything
that. Yeah.
But I can't imagine many people wanted to play with Bad Manners at the time. I remember seeing them giving Madness a real hard time on stage, Lyceum, somewhere it was.
Yeah.
Even more recently, about 15 years ago or something, my friend Jake Burns said to me, I hate having to play with Bad Manners on the same bill because you look really miserable. And so, that was just for me personally. I mean, because I'd go to see like The Clash and whoever I was going to see, And, And then you'd go and see your friends play in places like the Pegasus or wherever it was, and it was just so funny.
So, how did you get into Bad Manners?
Through the back door. No, I was actually.
Was this because I mean the last thing I remember personally from my point of view was I heard Blue Summer.
Yeah,
which was 83, wasn't it? Yeah.
No, I don't know. That was later than that.
Was it later, was it?
No, I played my first Bad Manners gig in 1986.
Oh, right.
I think it was about 1985 they did that album on CBS.
Yeah.
Which was once accurately described to me by Louis Alfonso. He gave me a copy. I was around his house. We was going out for our usual Thursday drink around the corner in the pub. And he gave me a copy. And I goes, oh, thanks. He goes, look. He goes, look at everyone. He goes, I look like a wanker, and I think I look at the best. Men standing in string vests. Yeah. Usually when I see men in string vests, they've got baked beans all down the front. What happened was...
What was you doing at the time? Was you actually in a band at the time?
Actually, before I actually started playing bands, me and Louis and Paul Hyman and... Who else was in it? Alan Perry. And we had a band called Love Squad.
Oh, Love Squad. Now, they were really good.
We used to rehearse every Thursday after we'd been to the pub, which isn't a good recipe for making music. But we played a couple of shows and stuff and that. But playing with Bad Manners is mainly because I once again bumped into Doug. I think I was in Springfield Park after it was. And he wanted me... No, that's not true at all. It's a lie. He rang me up to ask me to play on his solo album.
Although he didn't tell me
it was a solo album, because you want to come down and play some tracks, and one was called Hawaiian War Song, which is and I thought this is good. I just thought we were just having a laugh, and then he got me to play some more, and then said, "Oh, this is going to be a solo album." Because what? Well, but the band's still going on, and he said, "Yeah," but he seemed a bit sheepish about it all. I don't know, but then I started playing gigs in Bad Manners, as I say, and then. Almost immediately, because there wasn't a lot of skinhead regulars, being in Bad Manners, besides your Lip Up Fatties and all that.
Yeah.
To me, that's just a different kind of music. I mean, but, and so that's when we started the band Busters All Stars. And that was just to play stuff like, these boots are made for stomping. So we did that, and eventually, as everyone knows, the bands kind of morphed into each other. And we recorded the album. We started with one called Eat the Beat, then it went to Return of the Ugly. And I thought, well, I wanted to make a record. I said, it's got to have a smile on its face, but I don't want funny.
Yeah.
That was achieved, and right down to the brilliant cover that was done by Steve Frill.
Yeah.
That was magnificent.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. But so yeah, and then on for a few years, and then
so I'll just interject here. Obviously, Return of the Ugly and stuff like that was for me. Probably
that was me trying to write a Mark Boland song.
Well, that's, to be honest with you, that's still probably their best album since. You know, there's nothing been there since.
Say that to me. I mean, obviously you've got the four original albums, then you've got the sort of trying to break into disco rap.
Disco rap, yeah, yeah.
Then we did that. I mean, I think
you must be very proud of it though.
Yeah. I mean, I have very happy memories of those times.
Yeah.
And writing those songs.
Were they the best? Were they the best times within the band at that time? Then, do you think? Would you say
at that time? Because you know you've gone from as I said playing some quite sparsely attended shows to going to America and playing really big places, realizing you're popular there, and then saying, right, well, let's do this thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then went in the studio and I had one of my interests. See, I was already doing King Hammond.
I was just going to say, we'll tie this in together.
I started doing King Hammond recording in 1986.
Where'd you get the name from?
Well, just because I always thought in reggae and sort of ska things, people always had a title like Prince Buster.
Right, yeah,
yeah. Comic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the original name was Lord Manchester.
That's just good.
Why?
I like that.
I was never going to be the singer. It was always always going to be someone who was famous in the past, and it was supposed to be a black guy and blah blah blah. Yeah. And
I remember seeing the press release. Yeah.
And and then the first track, funny enough for me, that I ever wanted to do was a ska version of a song called A Taste of Honey, which the Beatles had done. And it's a taste of honey, tasting much sweeter than wine didn't I dream that. It was all this sort of Mersey beat, come blue beat, whatever. And that was my first idea. Then I got into the idea of King Hammond because I love the Hammond organ.
So did Hammond start before you entered Bad Manners?
The first track I actually recorded as King Hammond was a cover again. It was a song called Jamaica by Led Zeppelin.
You don't have to go. Oh, Lorna.
Right, yeah, I used to tag it into Oh Lorna on stage. But then I went out one day to get a wimpy, as is my womp, and I wrote Scarville UK walking down the street. I just came out with, this ain't downtown, J.A., this is awful. Brilliant. And so I basically made the whole thing up in about 45 minutes, went home, recorded it on my GF777 ghetto blaster. And then as soon as I finished that, I wrote King Hammond Shuffle, which is basically the same song.
It's got
the same notes in the guitar, just in a different.
Yeah.
It's like Eric Morecambe. I'm playing all the right notes, but
not necessarily in the right order.
And so, so then I had this idea, King Hammond. Then I started going over to, I'll tell you what I did. I went to Chrysalis next, and I recorded in the basement of Chrysalis with a guy whose name I can't remember, which is really well known. He's Morris's MD. He had the band The Polecats, Boz. Right. Sorry. I'm getting old. My name's getting old. And we recorded two tracks underneath Chrysalis in their studio, Murder on the Disco Express. And one called Mighty Love, I think it was called. It all kind of mixes into one. But all I remember was, so I'd done those. Then we started doing lots of gigs as Bad Manners picked up.
Yeah.
We went over to America in 1987 or 88 as Buster's All-Stars. Just me.
All right.
But Buster and the drummer. No, it wasn't even the drummer. It was just me and Buster.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. It was the drummer, Andy Bruton. Anyway, so we're playing this big venue called the Variety Arts Theatre, which used to have a boat on the scene. I remember they took us for Chinese before across the road, and everybody who worked in the Chinese was a murderer or a rapist or whatever. They was all, you know, and that was part of the deal, getting them better with time.
Right.
Anyway, so we went on there, and I don't know how much you know, like say Bad Manners, but I always used to play two songs in the middle. Like instruments, while Fatty had the rest, or did whatever, having a drink or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I've got this new one I want to do. And so I said, all right. So we'd arranged it and all that. And I went out and said, this ain't downtown, J.A. This is Scarville, L.A. And the crowd went mental. Ooh. And he was just on his last stage. And then he came straight back on. And then afterwards he goes, we've got to do that song. And I said, but I've already recorded it. Like, it's going to be, I'm going to do this thing, you know.
Yeah.
But in the end we did, yeah. And there was another one that was the B-side of that Scarville UK single. It was a track of my $1 Hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
And we needed a B-side. And so I let Doug say some stuff over the backing track and it became Rocksteady Breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. Not
a great moment. I mean, the music's great, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, yeah. I mean, it was all mixed up at the time. I really wanted just to do this thing called King Hammond.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but and then with Doug giving me due, I mean, I think he saw there was something great in it, and that's why he put it on the Bluebeat label, and it sold really, really well.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was second only to Return of the Ugly.
Right, I'm going to start there because what we've got, because we're on time, we've got some of you. I've asked you to pick your favourite track, so we'll interject with the track every so often, right? Now,
yeah. What are these tracks?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. I mean, it's like anybody else, isn't it? And I say this every week, is that, you know, if you asked to pick your favourite tracks, it'd change every day, wouldn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know the word. Yeah. So I think you've done well considering, because I know what you like for your music. Right, this first one we're going to play first, then we'll come back, and then we will ask you why you chose it. This is, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Hammond, his first choice. This is The Four Tops, and is it Simple Game?
Simple Game.
The Four Tops, back in a minute.
That we're going to be free. You and me will touch the sky. Can't you see in your life that we are one? We're all the same. The Simple Game. I did it, 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 did it. There by your side, oh, yeah. I will be,
oh, yeah.
When this crazy world is free,
free from doubt, when it finds out exactly.
It's a message to you, Rudy.
That was The Four Tops, Simple Game, the first choice by my guest tonight, the wonderful Mr. Nick Welsh. Why did you choose that one, sir?
Because I'm a soul man!
Man!
I don't know. As you said, records, you know, it changes every week. It could have been a record by the, you know, Temptations or whatever.
Is it not a symbolic record? Is it not Because a lot of people throughout these podcasts have chosen stuff that influenced, you know.
My whole life, ever since I heard it.
Yeah.
The bit I love most about the record, it's got a great message, but it's the way he sings, as the way they sang that.
They're a great band, though. They are a great band, though.
Four Tops, a vocal group, I think we should be calling them.
Vocal group.
I mean, it's like Reach Out, any of those tracks. They're so brilliant, Bernadette and all those ones. But I just love that song. It seems to have a strong message to me. I think I heard it when I was maybe 11 or 10 or whatever I was. But yeah, no, I love Motown. I was lucky enough. I've been to Motown. I've been to the studios and all that. You know, I just love it. It's part of growing up. I mean, I don't want to sound like an old bugger here, but I seriously love new music, lots of new music. But I really believe at that point in the late 60s, early 70s, every form of music was at its height, whether it's pop, you know, with like...
Yeah, I agree.
Soul, Motown, whatever, reggae, Trojan. It was just at that time, everything hit.
Top of the pops, yeah.
It's amazing. Sometimes you see it on things like Facebook. Some people, I don't know, maybe it's Uncle Phil.
He does the chart things, yeah.
And then sometimes when you see ones from say 70 and like nine of the ten top 10 records are classics. or you see a record that's like number 17 or something, you think, how could that only be there?
Yeah, I know, I do that all the time, yeah.
I saw one the other day that was Mind Games, John, and only got to number 16.
Mad, innit? It's absolutely mad, innit? What was so obviously the 16 above them were obviously better. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, that record, I know. I remember reading the music papers at the time. That wasn't. They said, "Oh, this is not much good." And I love it. I love the idea in the song where the middle bit of that, "Love is the answer," and you know that he said to him, "Can you play reggae?" And they went, "What?" Because they're American guys. This is 72, 73.
Yeah.
And he said, the only thing I could think of showing him was the Israelites. And he tried to show them that. And you can hear it in the background. There's something like
reggae.
You know, there's something like reggae going on there.
Not sure. Yeah.
You just ignore my insult there.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I know what you're saying. I'm skipping over that.
Yeah, no, it's okay. That's a great record. Simple Game.
So, right, Simple Game, that's the Four Tops. We'll come to your next one in a bit. Now, King Hammond, so your first album as King Hammond was?
Revolution 70.
Now, that is a classic. It's a bit of a cult classic, really, isn't it?
I hadn't listened to it for, like, when I started coming back in 2010, I don't think I'd listened to the record for, like, 20-odd years. Yeah. And I put it on just and I thought, this is unique. I mean, it doesn't sound anything like skinhead reggae. And people said, there was people at the time, you must remember, going, I got the originals. And like, you know, people said that to me when I was out. You know, I said, oh, yeah. You know, and they go, yeah, I got the originals on the original labels and all that.
Well, that's a great thing to say.
I just want to point this out. I mean, because like people often say to me, you're very good, your music is very good at genre hops and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the idea of King Hammond originally was that he tried to jump on any bandwagon.
Yeah, yeah.
There was dub. I can hear my wife blowing her nose.
Hello, Stacey.
That dub of the ill-fated King Hammond on the Buses album. That was the dub one. And then there's a track called Skinhead Revolution, which was a mixture of reggae and glam, and it only reached 184 in the chart and stuff. But he was someone that would jump on any bandwagon and stuff, you know. So,
but do you not think he has, though?
Sorry?
Do you think he has? I think he has. With the way you've recorded.
Yeah.
You know, you have.
That's just the story was then. Now, it's just because I like so much different kind of music. And one morning I'll listen to Stevie Wonder and I'll make a poor attempt at trying to be Stevie Wonder. I mean, I think most songwriters do that. You think, oh, this sounds like this, or I'm going to write a song like this.
Yeah.
But it only ever sounds like you.
Yeah.
You know? Songs now, who I was trying to be like or whatever. Well, I probably couldn't. But, And you know, but it just sounds like me, you know. And I can't just do them. That the big brass thing, and it's not for me.
It's not for me.
And like the lyrically, my songs make a bit different from most ska reggae people.
Well, they are, because they're more in depth, aren't they?
Well, there's
the depth in the writing, is what I'm saying.
You know, about there's quite a few songs about addictions because it's well documented in my book. I've had years of that, and then like personal favourites of mine, like about mental illness. I've, you know, been there. Yeah. I still am there occasionally.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all? Yeah.
Tourniquet, that song, I loved that, which was, you know, like even down to songs where people say, oh, that's funny, but it's not meant to be funny. Like a song like called, like Chicken and Chips.
Chicken
and
Chips, yeah.
Not a funny song. The original lyric went, that boy just eat, but girl sounded better.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went for girl, but the song's about me saying, you know, ease up on that, you know, and about food and stuff like that. And a lot of people, like another one of those is You Can't Get Those Sweet Things Anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It off. And I say, well, it's not. It's sad.
It's quite a sad, yeah. It's a sad lyric.
Yeah, there was a time when I was like in my 18 to 20, whatever, when you could get a look, a second look in the street from a girl and a boy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like just saying that will never happen now. That's not going to happen. Not even as a laugh, the woman's not going to turn around or the man's not going to turn around. Not even a dog's going to turn around unless you've got a
dog,
treat.
Mate.
But they're serious songs, but you just try them. I mean, with that one, I know that I was trying to be late 60s Ray Davis, you know.
It works, though.
But, you know, but it's just me, but, you know. So you get songs like that and Chicken Chips, as I said, like that people think are funny, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're highly personal, and they're like, you know, about my life. Dancing in the Garden of Evil is another one that I really like.
Now, that is one of my favourites, yeah.
Over the last 5 years, The Outsider is a big one. That's a clue.
Well, there. I was just going to say... The latest stuff from hit, especially from hit culture onwards, is sublime. I mean, it's fantastic production, but the whole thing is just, you know, it's for me, it's big record company business, isn't it? That's what it should be.
Well, I personally think I should be doing better than I am, but is that because I'm not doing what I should be doing in pushing? I can't do that push all the time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Look at me, you know, it's like I could write a great biography for your band.
Yeah.
But write about yourself. I struggle in sort of biography terms.
Yeah.
Not in song. It's easy.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, maybe I should be more pushy or whatever, but. Maybe that's the one side of me. There is an ego there underneath all this, thinking I should really be, you know.
Do yeah. Well, I mean that's understandable because it's the name of the game that you and the nature of the business you're in.
That's the thing with music. Music's all about a dream, and who knows? Next year, someone might hear I don't know, Out of Control or The Outside or whatever.
Yeah. That's what I always said to people. Yeah.
So it's a dream, you know. Mm. You never know.
You just never know, do you? It's like when you like I said, people, you know, if there's six people in the audience, go out and play the gig like there's 1,000 people. You just don't know. You don't know who's ever watching.
I'd love playing to 20,000 people when I can and if I can. But if there's only 8 people in the crowd, well then. And in fact, to be honest, I remember gigs mostly with Bad Manners. One in Boise, Idaho, I remember, and then one in Reykjavik once, where there was more people on stage than there was in the crowd. You know,
yeah,
and but that one in Boise, I remember we went on and played for about 2.5 hours. Bad Manners set is usually always just an hour and encore,
yeah.
And I think we played every, you know, almost all the big two-tone tracks, claiming them as our own because nobody knew, you know, Message to You or Something Really Gangsters. I'll tell you why we could do that as well. I just remembered it's because. We'd rehearsed them and we were going into the studio to record The Sound of Scar.
The Sound of Scar. Yes.
Where I impersonated Suggs and all that stuff.
Was Suggs going to do it? Did he pull out?
He apparently was going to do it. And then, because he wasn't doing a lot of something, then I think maybe the story I heard was he started managing the band The Farm.
That's right, he did, yeah.
And
then,
so he
so
didn't happen.
Who, on The Sound of Scar, who was it? Who was the lineup? Well, who actually played on that album?
It was, in fact, it was supposed to be Perry Melis, a magnificent drummer.
Yeah.
But in the end, he didn't do it. They used a drum machine.
Oh, right.
He is a drum machine. He does not, you know, skip a beat. And there was me on bass and Martin Stewart on keyboards, Neil Davis on guitar.
Selector, yeah.
I can't remember who else there was in the band, to be honest. But I remember they had Pauline there. So
was that the start of Selector? Restart?
I think maybe we did a couple of shows where Pauline and Neil came along and it was called
I've actually seen
Busters All-Stars. And then, it wasn't long after that. It was, Martin.
Why did you leave Bad Manners, though? What was the decision?
Why did I leave?
Yeah. Oh, why? Well, you and Martin left together, didn't you?
No, Martin got the sack. For putting together a tour with Pauline and Neil and calling it Selector. He got the sack from the band, which I thought was wrong. Wrong. Totally outrageous.
Yeah.
I went off and I got the band a what they call a dep bass player in.
Yeah.
You know.
A dep, yeah.
And then did it all. And then I really enjoyed it. And then my thing was to come back to Bear Manners. And then I went out for a drink with Fatty in the West End. And I said, you know what? If there's any other chance I could do any others, is that cool? And he went, no, it's this band or nothing now.
Yeah.
You know, and so I said, you can't do it, especially with someone you've grown up with, you've known since Cubs and Scouts.
Yeah,
and
it's not as if you're just a team member, is it?
So in the end, I just had to say, well, no. Even if I didn't do another show with the Selector ever,
the principal.
You can't tell your mate that you can't do this.
But you went on to record many. I mean, I thought that I love the Happy album. I have to. There's loads of albums, man. But the Happy album.
We did the proper albums, are like the Happy album and
Popper
and Cruel Britannia.
Cruel Britannia.
A couple of good live ones. There was quite a lot of stuff put out to get us to tour. You know, like we want to go to America, so we'd put a record out somewhere to get an advance, to buy tickets, to get your...
Was it your ideas to put out the rare series?
I can't remember. What's that thing? You get visas.
Visas.
And stuff like that, you know. So we needed something to promote and we needed to make money because it wasn't like a huge money band.
But
I mean, the Happy album is my favourite. I think
it's
quite dark in places, really well written. Pauline sings great, you know, it's good. I like that, and I liked Cruel Britannia
a lot.
The Pucker had some good songs on it.
Pucker's a great album as well, but
it's got some great songs on it, but I can't listen to it because of the drugs I was taking at the time. They affect all you get a top end and bottom end when you're taking pharmaceutical recreational powdered and when the engineer is as well, and some of the band, not the singer that, but some of the other band. So there was one called Real to Real, which I just heard the other day, and it was okay.
All right.
But yeah, the Happy album and Cruel Britannia I thought were really good.
Cool.
I thought, the two live albums were really good.
Which ones were those? The Out in the Streets?
I can't remember now because obviously I've never read my book. Yeah. But what came out of that as well, there was a few offshoot things I did with Pauline, but I really liked Selector Acoustic.
Yeah, that was good, I must admit. Yeah.
There was an album called Unplugged for the Rude Boy Generation.
That's right, yeah.
Which was really has got a lovely feel to it. And what was the other one? Requiem for a Black Soul.
Yeah.
It's a song. I think Pauline had the lyrics, is all about Nina Simone. I'm a huge Nina Simone fan. It's good, and we worked well together doing that, you know. But then that came to an end because, you know, it'd been quite a long time. And you know what? This is what I said to myself. If I thought I was ill, seriously ill, which I wasn't, I think I would want to start singing my own songs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think, you know. Because I've always thought your job, Nick, is to be a really good bass player, do all the backing vocals, be a great backup person. And then eventually you think, you know, and it took me a while to get into it. And then, so I formed Scarville UK.
Good band.
Big Five before then with Jenny Bell.
I was going to say, I just going to mention Big Five. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were fucking, that was brilliant.
I put them in the same bracket, sort of bands that maybe, if we'd hung around a bit longer, maybe we would have...
Yeah, I think so.
I think sometimes when you do some good stuff and it's a bit different from what the other bands are doing, you seem to think it should happen for you straight away.
Yeah, yeah. I quite enjoyed the jump from Pop Scatic, which was pop, wasn't it? You know, let's be honest. Yeah. You know, and then the punkier.
And me and Jenny, really.
Yeah.
And it was like pop soul.
Yeah.
I based a lot of that sound on a record, Your Kiss Is Sweet. I've actually got a version of Big Five doing it. You know the song, Sayrita?
Sweet as candy.
Stephen Wonder's song written for his wife, Sayrita. So it was based around that because Jenny, beautiful pop voice, you know.
Yeah.
And then Perry bailed. I don't know where he went to do something decent. I think he went to work with Trick.
All right.
then so kind of like started getting this punkier edge coming into it and this, and then Brad joined. Had my mate John Bradbury.
John Bradbury, God bless him, yeah.
Yeah, and we had Rico and all that. So, you know, I mean, when we first started doing Scarville, we did Rico at gigs
did,
and stuff.
Did Big Five just peter out, or was it did you come to a stop?
Sorry, I was just taking a sip of Coke. yeah, no, it just kind of petered out. You know, yeah. Everyone started doing things. You've got to remember, I had to try and fit things in around the selector.
Yeah, you were selector, yeah.
And then we were doing acoustic things, so it's pretty busy. And all this time, I'm writing loads of songs. Like, you know how many songs I write?
Oh, God,
so
yeah.
I'm writing all the way through that. I've got boxes of them in the other room. You know, just songs that I thought, oh, I might do a solo album one day. And then I did one called The Soho Sessions. And it was kind of a bit of a... I let myself down a bit. I sort of did some of my older songs in an acoustic thing. I should have just gone and done new songs. Yeah. But they're all still there, you know.
Well, yeah. You can always use them.
I'm a big one for ditching them. Once they've gone past that, oh, I don't do that. But lately, there was one from the time... So we're talking, what, 2002 or something, say, maybe a bit before. There's one song I remember that came out of all that writing called The Devil in Me, which I used. That was from that time. I basically didn't change anything. So they're all of that kind of standard. And I love that song, you know.
Right.
And I just thought, it was after a conversation, funny enough, with Pauline Black,
where
she said, you know, I think you do your King Hammond and Nick Wilson, just gets a bit mixed up, and she's right.
I thought,
well, if I want to do an acoustic track or whatever, it doesn't have to be Nick Welsh.
No,
right?
It doesn't, no.
You know, so I call it King Hammond. If people don't like it, well, I don't really mind, because it's, as I say, I make records and write for myself.
Self, yeah.
You know, and I hate this well-worn phrase now, but like when I've been going to the studio, it's been for making new music, but for mental health.
Absolutely, no, I totally agree. It's good for you. Well, yeah, yeah.
4 or 5 hours or whatever, I feel
normal. Yeah,
I feel normal. What you're supposed to doing. Yeah. And you know, the idea is like the other day, I put a post up on my Facebook about it. You know, I was watching a bit of TV. I think I was watching the Jeremy Vine show,
yeah,
which is my watch in the morning. Yeah. And I just got the idea for a title of a song in there. I went straight up, rushed out, got my guitar out, went down. Within 20 minutes, I had the basis. Not everything, not all the words and everything.
No, but you got the structure.
The basis of a really good song, and I started recording it yesterday.
That's mad. Isn't it? That's crazy.
It sounds mental. And it hasn't even got any bass put on it yet, but it's kind of like... It's weird for me to say these names when I'm talking about King Hammond. There's kind of an element of the beat to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it's an influence, isn't it?
Right, and there, and
I know you like Wakeley.
I was trying to emulate Gang of Four.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite. Oh, it's got an edge to it. It's still got the offbeat thing, as I said, but it's got a good edge to it. The song's called Scream, and I started doing that. You know, I'm gonna, as I said, next year I've got an album going to come out called This Is My World, 12 new tracks. I'm really looking forward to this.
Good man.
People like yourself and other people have said your production and songwriting really took a step up.
Oh,
well,
this
is taking a step up from this.
It's even better then.
You know, I just.
Right. I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to stop you there because it's time for another one of your tracks now.
Okay, what is it?
Can you remember what you said? This next one is Dr. Ali Montado. So what's it going to be?
The Born for a Purpose.
Born for a Purpose. This is the wonderful Dr. Ali Montado with Born for a Purpose, back in it with Nick Welsh.
Get some Northeast ska.
There you go, Dr. Adamantado. Come on then, son.
I've got to see him, you know, in concert. I've actually got an autographed picture of him in my hallway.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is he still around?
Yeah. That was his big... that was his bigger record, right? I'll tell you how that happened. I knew the record, and at one point in the middle of 1977, they gave John Lydon a show on Capitol for the evening, and played that. He said he played that song after he got knifed. You know, he got famously knifed.
Yeah.
And that's the tune he played, if you feel like you have no reason for living, you know. And he got most of Britain were going mental, all the punks on that song. And so really that's how I got him. I remember we went to see him. This was only about maybe 15 years ago, 10, 15 years ago. Mm. And he came on and he said, "I'm Dr. Alan Montado. I've come here and I've only got an hour on stage." And he went, and I should be doing this. I went, 59 minutes. I felt bad because I love the guy. And he never did that song either.
Did
that song, which was a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, but that
for me is like punk days, you know, because it's a world.
So that track there you've chosen is quite a symbolic track, then, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's well reported that. In fact, I mean, the first time I not reported about this about me, but about this thing I was going to say. Well, I was playing the Roxy, and it was like the first paid gig I've got. I'd played there once before. It was like an audition night for the Roxy, the famous punk club, for anybody who doesn't know.
So the next
time I played there, I walked on the stage to do the sound check, and it was Don Letts. He was the DJ.
Not bad.
and then in the crowd was Joe Strummer and Mick Jones and Paul Simonon.
Okay, now.
That was there. So and on that week... myself and my oldest friend Brian were on the front of Melody Maker, and the headline said Ted V Punk, and we were there at the punk. It was at a Chelsea gig, taken at the Marquee. Yeah. And so, but what I was going to say was, what is well reported, is the reason why they started playing lots of reggae these punk shows is because there wasn't enough punk records.
Right.
And the fact that Don Letts was obviously a reggae, you know, primo or whatever DJ. She was then. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But, you know, I loved it. I mean, I started learning bass, it was reggae lines. That's what I was taught from my school teacher. My bass teacher, I should say, Steve Beresford. He definitely deserves a mention because he made the fantastic record as The Flying Lizard's Money. I want...
Oh, is that him? Oh, right. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
And so... when I first went in, the first bass line I ever learned was ba-doom, boom, Lively Up. The second, admittedly, was Money by Pink Floyd. But then I learned all these things like MPLA and all them kind of pick up the rockers bass lines. And then I used to teach them to the kids in the class. It was great. So that's my thing, reggae bass still is.
Yeah, I'm
a Grammy Award reggae bass player. The record at all, but the bass lines, they're magnificent.
So I'll tell you what, while you're talking about bass and stuff like that, it's not often, and to be fair, you've documented it in quite, you know, across the years and stuff, but you have a Grammy Award, don't you?
That's a
massive thing, isn't it?
Well, the story of it, you know, it's like, let's put it this way, I got asked to do something by Roger Lomas, good friend, great producer. And I got sent three hip-hop songs, which he said that's what Lee Perry, who's the record we're talking about, wanted to do. So I learnt them faithfully, turned up for this recording. It was lasting a week. And then we did those in about an hour. And then they said, what's next? And everybody just stood there. So basically, I just started playing bass lines that I had pinned for maybe King Hammond at some point or some project.
Yeah, so in your head, yeah.
Some of them are made up on the spur at the moment, but when I left it, had bass Al Fletcher on drums, God rest his soul.
Oh, lovely Al.
And I just left it there. That's what it was, bass and drums. And then I hadn't heard any of the rest or whatever. And then I got a call, maybe it was from Roger or someone else, who said, the album won a Grammy and you get a little thing to show you participate as a musician or whatever.
Wow.
So it's nice because I know in my head what I did for that record.
Yeah, on a personal level.
And the bass lines are really good.
It's a good album, actually.
I'm not a fan.
It's not brilliant, but it's all right.
I will say this. I think Roger did an amazing job getting it. You know, it's not the easiest. So,
no,
you know,
he's not.
He did an amazing job. But, like, yeah, I mean, yeah, I might actually reclaim some of that bass lines.
And use them up, yeah.
Another album then. It's King
Hammond. Another one. So, well, I mean, you've also got all this book out, haven't you? The Life and Times of a Scammer on Whitehaven Publishing.
New Haven,
sorry, not Whitehaven. I'm thinking of
Whitehaven, what's that about?
I've played in Whitehaven, that's the problem.
New Haven,
that's it. New Haven Publishing.
Whitehaven, I've played in Whitehaven. Isn't that near a nuclear plant?
Yes.
I played there with Bad Manners once, I remember. It's like up to the left.
So what was your purpose for doing this? I mean, was it purely selfish? Was it purely?
The idea of writing a book was I just wanted to do it. To be honest,
from a reading point of view, it's a great tale. I mean, the whole thing is.
Right. Well, I mean, there will be a bigger version
it's
of
a
that book.
Yeah, you said this.
There will be a bigger version because, like, there was something with the company said it was quite brickish, and that means it was quite big. So I want to do it. I want to write more.
Was the person the way it's written, the way it reads and stuff? It's colourful. It's honest. It's upbeat. It's downbeat. It's got everything. But when you compare it to, if you look at the Neville Staples book, which is a good book, but it's all about, do you know what I mean? It's just like, well, I did this and I did that.
I don't know if I've ever read.
Well, yeah. Everything's different. That's just fair enough. But yours, I think, stands out from the whole crop.
Maybe was it written with someone else or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, it was written with somebody else. So yeah.
Sometimes people will try and get you to go a certain direction.
Yes, yeah.
You know what I mean? What happened to me was I read some of it to a friend of mine who I really respect as a writer, and he said to me, oh, it's really funny, Nick, but it just doesn't sound like you. And I was trying to be a bit smart-ass, a bit Stephen Fry when I haven't got the ability. So what I did I went back, almost deleted everything, and then got a bottle of brandy in, and then went for it every night.
You did.
You know,
you did.
And I think it needs to have that talking to someone in a pub bit. For me, that's how that book works for me.
And that's how it works, yeah.
Very, very sad bits in it.
There is.
I mean, although I think it's well written, I lost interest like when I started after school. I like all the early bits.
The early bits,
I think there's some very sad bits in there. There's bits I remember when my mum and dad were splitting up, and I describe in the book. We went back to where I lived for Christmas, but we went three doors down from my house and stayed with what was called, in those days, everybody had an auntie.
An uncle and auntie, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But they're not your auntie.
Yeah.
And so we was like three doors away from where my dad was, but I didn't get to see him.
That's
and
crazy.
Then was coming out the car and it was really foggy. It was like proper 1952 London.
Yeah.
And there's a big hill coming down. And I saw this silhouette or a shadow almost like coming down the hill. And it was him. And my mum said, get in the car now and all this. And
okay.
I think I did quite injustice. But like, yeah, I mean, I not lost interest.
I know what you mean.
I just like those early bits, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Being carried out a pop quiz, like when Alan Freeman threw me out for shouting out the answers. And I remember I had each shoulder and the elbows and they're being carried about by the Radio 1 security. If it was in the bees, my legs would be going round. Like, you know, I loved it. But yeah, it will be. I am writing at the minute, and it
so
will
is it
be,
is it going to be is it going to be the same book bulkier, or will it be a part two?
It's quite a well known thing. So most people just do another chapter. I'm going to write about half the amount again.
Yeah.
Because there's so much missing out of it.
Well, that's what I was saying. We said this, didn't we? We said this, that there was...
I know, that's it. My only rule in the book, I don't have rules about making music or writing. The only rule I had was I am not going to put anybody else and insult them or do whatever, because I was asked to do that by people.
Yeah,
couldn't you have done this person? And I was not going to do it. It's my story, my book.
Yeah.
No one comes out bad in that book except for me.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. That's how it should be. Yeah, it's a very honest book, isn't it? You know, I mean, that's the thing about it as well.
I couldn't really judge it against anything else because I hadn't read anything else in the genre.
Yeah.
You know, you say Neville and.
But it does stand out. I mean, I've read them all. And it does stand out, and because just because it is colourful and it makes you laugh and it makes you.
It's a different kind of book. Yeah. I mean, I would say, for instance, read Pauline's book, but I should imagine it's well written because she's
well written, but it's heavy going. Yeah.
you know. But that's her story.
I'm not complaining about it, but I just think
the one I've never read is Rankin Rogers' book, which I'd like to read.
Yes, I haven't read. That's the only one I haven't read yet so far.
Because I love the guy. I mean, he was a fantastic performer. And then before he sadly passed, he made two records, which I thought were great.
Yeah, they were very, very good.
Maybe other members of the Beats had come up with it or whatever. I thought that was a great record.
It was Bounce and was it Public Confidential, wasn't it? Maniac, yeah. And that it was brilliant.
I think the second one was better than the first, so that's a good sign. You're growing all the time.
And then
when he got ill, and I couldn't believe it.
That's mad.
How as stupid as the next man? You think? I just think of his the way he looked. Yeah. You think how can he be ill? He's like the fittest man in the world. Not thinking about any other illnesses there are in the world.
That's it, I know. But he does, and he's still a young man, wasn't he? Really.
Yeah, he was.
Right. We'll leave that there because obviously he's bless him. He's very upset, I think, when you talk about him because it's so sad. But we're going to go back to your music now, and this is your choice number three, which I thought was definitely getting in. So I knew he would anyway. David Bowie, of course. Bowie, how you pronounce it, whatever you.
David Bowie. You're going to wear makeup like David Bowie. The thing about Dave, what track did I choose? I can't.
You
remember.
Chose John. I'm Only Dancing.
Right, so that's just before Aladdin Sane.
Yeah.
When I bought Aladdin Sane on the day it came out, I got mugged for it. It's in my book. I actually got mugged for it by some guy.
That's right.
I think Rod Stewart fan with a tartan scarf and big flares all up to mind. He said, "You got that Bum Boys record," and then stole it from me. Because in the old days, when you had like a Bowie album, Bowling On, later on with the Piss or something, you didn't put it in the bag. Took it out and carried it under your arm.
Yeah, it's like a badge of honour. Yeah.
You know, and I remember saying to him, if it's a Bum Boys record, why are you stealing it from me? And anyway, so I went home and I was really sad and a bit tearful. And my dad said, "What's the matter with you?" And I said, "Oh, blah, blah, blah." And he was going down to a friend's pub about a mile and a half down the road. And he said, "Come on, come out with me." So we drove. And then he looked at me when he was in the car. He goes, "What's that?" I goes, "That's the boy who stole my record. He's good at his job. He's
got to him in."
And he looked, and I remember him just smiling. Anyway, so we drove down, went to the pub where his mate was the landlord. You know, having a drink. I had me Coke and crisps or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I saw where he smiling because the kid came in and it was his mate's son.
Ooh, did you get it back?
2020 here. We're talking 1973. I'm going to smash your head against the wall. The dad, you did what? To Nicky's son. Bang! You know, like, slightly different times, I think. I got my record back.
Brilliant. Wow. Brilliant.
So, that's the David Bowie story.
Yeah, so, right. Ladies and gentlemen, this is John I'm Only Dancing by the wonderful, the one and only David Bowie. I'll be back in a minute.
I'm men talking amongst themselves.
You've got the Scapones Sound Off Podcast.
Welcome back to Scapones Sound Off Christmas Podcast. And that's Nick Welch.
Right, take it. Mick Jagger do something. Scapones, all right? You know, we've got a new song.
Yeah, got the Scapones, mate.
The song is called. I've always wanted to do that song. I have it on my set list. One of my favourite ever tracks ever by any band is Monkey Man by the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
And so people look at your set list and they go, they're going to do Monkey Man tonight, and then you do the Stones one. And there's a Monkey Man! That would be brilliant.
Yeah, it was an idea, that, actually. Yeah. So, I mean, so let's talk about what's going on currently. I mean, the thing is, we could talk to you for... We could do a series of podcasts on you just generally. But... Yeah.
I mean, I was going to make the COVID noise.
Is there a COVID noise?
No, I don't know what it is. But the COVID noise is staying in my house. Yeah. But you know what? That's not such a problem for me. I do the Netflix. I've got loads of music to play, loads of films, whatever.
Yeah, I know.
I know, but I miss gigging.
Yeah, it's getting out.
You know. I'm actually going to get out tomorrow. I'm going to see my daughter.
Yeah, and the thing about playing live as well and stuff like that, as you well know, is people want to come up to you, slap you on the back, and it's such a thing.
And also, it's just that connection with people.
Connection, exactly. That's the thing.
But you know what? I like the whole day. I like going up to wherever, Derby or wherever, yeah, you know, stopping off places and driving home. Well, not me personally, but tired at night and stuff, you know. But it seems all worthwhile if you've done a good gig.
Right, so let's concentrate on what's going on in the future. You've been talking about your brand new album, which will be next year. That's right, isn't it? I mean, that's the one. That's the one. Welcome to my world, Mr. Nick Welch.
What do you want to know?
What I'm saying is that obviously the ska and reggae is. I don't know if it's.
Yes, there's ska and reggae in it, I suppose.
No, what I'm saying is, I'm about the genre in general, right? So. Obviously, the UK scene has got many bands and stuff, like even original bands and stuff. What do you make of it? Do you listen to any of it, or do you not take any notice? Or
honestly, no, I don't really. I knew there was a Specials record out last year. Heard some of that, you know, it's okay. I don't really know. No, that's a lie, because I actually went out and recorded with.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Got a message come up on my phone from my daughter. I've got chilblains.
And I'm not to scratch them.
Guitar Pop, who have done a cover of my King Hammond Shuffle. It's now the Death of Guitar Pop Shuffle.
Have you heard it yet?
Well, when I was in the studio, I'd be pretty funny singing to it if I didn't hear it.
No, I mean, have you heard anything mixed?
It sounds to me like. Originally. The King Hammond Shuffle, but played better and sounding better because it wasn't done in an 8-track studio in 1986 or whatever.
I know.
And they're really nice guys. And I added some new verses and put some ad libs in there. So, yeah, hopefully it'll be sound good. So that's a new band. I suppose the Jewelers is a band. I mean, I've only seen bits.
You know, listen. You know, I can't be asked for them, to be honest. I think his treatment of his band was shocking.
I can remember standing next to you, the big one when they let you
exactly
like
yeah.
an hour to go. So that's always going to be
in your mind.
In my mind when I think. But it sounds great. The music is all well played, but I haven't seen much else but covers and stuff online. Maybe. What people choose to film. Yeah. I know that. It's like you do 10 songs in a set and the one you choose to do, say, Scarville UK, that's the one they'll film.
It's filmed. Yeah, exactly.
To be honest, I don't really know. The only time I ever get to see any new bands is when I'm at, say, something like the big one, where you've got them all. But I'm usually far too drunk to take any of them, you know, and also in my own space of, you know, whatever. Or I've just come off doing a show there and everybody's being nice to me.
What are you listening? What do you what you class as new? It doesn't have to be Scam Reggae, but what are you listening to? Where do you go looking for new stuff? Not necessarily Scam Reggae, but where do you go?
Music as well. They're probably by artists that have been around a while. True. But like I'll listen to anything new from Nick Cave.
Yeah.
Anything new from PJ Harvey.
Yeah.
There's a band called Air I love. They did an album called Moon Safari. That's maybe 15 years old. They've done a lot since then. There's a band called Public Service Broadcasting.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that I love.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, basically, when you hear their albums, it's like sort of I don't know what the genre you call it, but it's, for me, it's like dance music.
Yep.
And they put a lot of live sound effects over the top. Like all they right. did one. That one, London Can Take It, they did a whole album with just the bits from that, and it's magnificent.
Oh, right.
You know,
I'll tell that.
It's magnificent. But yeah, I like, there's lots of new stuff I like. I tell you what I did like that I heard today.
Yeah.
Was the new Gwen Stefani single.
Yes, I listened to that today for the first time.
I liked what the lyrics were saying more than the music.
She's gone back a bit. She's gone back a bit to a reggae roots, hasn't she?
Like
a bit.
Saying, you know, I've grown or whatever. I'm not the record the show or whatever it was, but I thought it was really good.
Yeah,
you know, and but I like pop music. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, that's understandable. Yeah. You can see it. Yeah.
You got to remember, I'm nearing 60. I'm not really going to change away from Boland, Bowie, Roxy.
No, Beeple, no, it's impossible.
Trojan, Tamla, you know, it's embedded in my DNA.
So, is Boland your favourite artist of all time?
Yeah.
Mark Boland.
It's weird. He's the person I used to go to see, follow around, go to his office, wait around. He's all
brilliant.
Blah, blah, blah. Got expelled from school from doing that. But now, because I've played it so much, it's Bowie. I played, you know, and Bowie was always there, just like
underneath.
Behind, you know, because in them days he was like a Bowie or a Boland fan, or if you were slightly younger, a Boland or a Slade fan.
Yeah.
But I play a lot more Bowie. I mean, he's such an interesting person and an interesting artist. And, you know,
did you see that? Did you see that the new Royal Mint coin?
I couldn't see who it was. He looked like the geezer from Aha.
He looks like him when he closed up. But you see the centre into space.
And then I heard there's a terrible biopic coming out.
Oh dear.
Called Stardust, right? Now I love a biopic. That's one thing everybody's got to know about.
Stardust, wasn't that David Essex?
Biopic. I remember watching an Elvis one once, and it took me like 5 minutes to work out who was Elvis. There's a great Carpenters one. There was one on the Beach Boys that was good. And I remember they were standing in the car park of the recording studio, and this girl comes along and drives off in the car. She's really beautiful. And he goes, "I bet you have fun. So the daddy takes a T-bird away," and he goes, "I got an idea for a song," and he runs off. That's why I like biopics. I've heard this Bowie one. I saw a tiny clip of it. Mm. They didn't allow them to use any David Bowie music in there.
Oh my God.
That's how bad it is. And I saw the Queen one and that Elton John one. I thought they were both good.
I couldn't get my head around the Elton John one, to be honest.
Elton John was a bit different. I kind of thought that was his kind of film.
Did you watch the Queen one?
Yeah.
What do you think? I might do it.
I hadn't watched it, would I?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you. But I quite enjoyed that Queen one too. I went to the Pigeons.
From a technical bit as well, I just want to say, they must have used people who can play, because I was watching their fingers like any boring musician does, it was bang on. And that's some good. Of them things, how they redid Live Aid, I don't know how they did it, obviously.
That was brilliant.
Computer-generated or whatever. That's just
fucking brilliant. It was.
You know. Right, and Queen, brilliant band. I saw Queen, you know, whatever it was, 1976 or whatever, and they were brilliant.
Really. Right, why aren't you just talking about Boland then? This is why I'm quite surprised we're going to move into your last choice here of your tunes. You took out Metal Guru, which I thought you had left the T-Rex one in there. Well, you know, I know, you think it's too, yeah, I know you probably think, people think it's, it's always going to be a Boland.
I know that I like Mark Boland, and like good friends that I love, like Aidan Sterling, you know, from the E. and the riffs.
Yeah.
He made me a Mark Boland t-shirt when I was a little bit on the stuff, which is still my favourite t-shirt I wear today. And so, you know, I think, oh, well, this goes. And at the moment when I chose those things, I've been listening to a lot of Lou Reed and Berlin. I mean, most people cite Transformers his album.
Yeah.
But Berlin is dark. I remember playing this track in particular.
Yeah.
See, I even remember what track I told you.
Yeah,
I remember going to a gig with the Selector in a van, and it being asked to be taken off by people in the van.
That's disturbing.
And is that disturbing? And when I said it was actually real, that was even more disturbing. But I just love it, you know. It's like someone, you listen to the music, it's like someone draining every bit of blood out of you as you're dying.
Oh, God, that's what music should do to you.
I just want to point out that on the millennium, when it went into the new millennium, that's the song we played when we was having a party. Just before it was The Needle and the Damage Done by Neil Young. I've seen you knocking on my cellar door. And that one. And then as it went to midnight, we played this track by Lou Reed.
Let's hear it now, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And the bed.
Oh, my God. Take it away, Lou. the Scapone's Sound Off podcast with Mythic Workshop. That was, whew, that was Lou Reed and whew, the bed. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I do think music should be music. Well, music should
jolly.
Well, music should make you feel many things. One should make you feel music should make you feel many things, and one of them is uncomfortable.
That makes me feel joyous. Which to most people, I don't know, or to maybe I'm wrong, but it would maybe bring them down a little.
I think it shows absolute genius.
Ripped to its best on a track. Yeah. That, I mean, I love music like that. I mean, I feel like Nick Cave is a bit like that sometimes.
He is, yeah, definitely. I agree. Yeah, very similar.
I
want
the other track that I just got introduced to by my studio man. WAP.
Who?
WAP.
WAP.
Yeah, I believe it's called Wet Ass Pussy.
I can't say I've heard of that one.
You know, I know 10 billion YouTube views. Just, well, you know, basically three women shaking their bottoms in that style that scares me. You know,
the twerky thing.
I like listening to a lot of dancehall, new reggae.
I was just going to say, because dancehall features very heavily in your recent stuff, doesn't it?
Well, my kind of dancehall, sort of
white. But the influence is all over it, isn't it?
The influence is there, yeah. I like pop music, so I'll put that, and I just love them beats. I check out modern dancehall, conscious music, as they say. Yeah. You know, I love it all. I love music, any kind of music. My life, mate. I've got family,
yeah.
My lovely wife, my lovely dog, and music. That's all I've got. I'm going to say this. I'm to you now.
Go on.
First time I've ever said this.
Yeah.
After, and it's not about the people personally. This is like 52 years of a love affair. It's not exactly broken down with West Brom as such. But as my friend said to me on the phone, I said, I'm going off now. I'm going to go and watch West Brom there on TV.
Yeah.
He said, well, enjoy your no crowd VAR, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know what? You're bollocks. Right. No atmosphere. There's not, you know. And I did say last year when they struggled to get up, at least just come up, get your money, so it keeps the club alive.
Yeah.
And then go back to the Championship, because the Championship's great.
Yeah.
I like the Championship.
I've said to you before, the Championship should be the Premier Division of English football.
The other reason why I'm really down on football, which is a big love of mine, at the moment, is due to something that's on ITV4 every Saturday, Big Match Revisited. I think it was Arsenal Newcastle. And the guy was going past the defender on a pitch, which nowadays they cancel it. Like, you know, there's mud and sand. And as he went past him, the Arsenal defender just grabbed him around the neck and threw him into the mud. And Brian Moore goes, he goes, that's right, he's going to get exactly what he deserves now. His name's going in the book. And now you'd be like 10 years suspended.
I'm going to say he'd be banned for 20 years now, wouldn't he? Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, I just love it. And like, it's just like, people trying hard, wherever they got there, like 80 quid a week or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And trying hard. Working class game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Working class people in the crowd, you know.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I mean, it's like at York, I'm a York City supporter. We're moving stadiums. And at the moment, the club's starting to auction off parts of the ground.
Well, that makes sense for them. You know?
Yeah, it does. It raises money and I mean, at the moment they're selling off the seats. Well, I'm not a seater. I'm a stander. I'm a terrace man. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't want a seat, but I want something else. I'll get something. I don't know what it's going to be until they obviously announce it.
Even when I was young and fit, well, as fit as I ever was, I still used to sit. I couldn't be bothered to stand.
You lazy twat. You
know? I think when I was young and getting in the little fights when I used to go, because obviously being a West Brom supporter, it was a bit far when you're young. So I used to go, all my friends are Arsenal.
Yeah.
So I was one of those horrible little kids that when the bigger kids got the geezer down,
you
give them a kick in the head.
I must admit, I was a part of the naughtiness in the 80s.
You want to be part of a crowd? Oh, mine was the 70s. It was much more classy. You used to get members of the Rubettes kicking your head in. Right? It's like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not proud of it, of course, but you're just growing up. I remember what's weird about it, though, is we used to go to Arsenal Highbury. We used to go into the boys' enclosure for, I think it was 5p, and you just go round the gate and go to the North Bank. Then when you went into what was the clubhouse where your food was, it was just a shed. It looked like something out of the Colditz story, you know, one of those sheds.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just a smell of dope coming in, and people with, you know, really disgusting smelling, you know, beer. It was great. And then you go to the Emirates now, and it's 10 quid for, you know,
it's a pile of shit. You know, it's got the soul's gone, I think. And I'll be honest with you, I think VAR, however, it's just, I don't even watch it anymore because it's pointless. It's American football. Like, it's American football, man.
The other day, they were looking at it, and then they called the ref over there. He looked at it and still gave it. You could say, no, this is nothing. Come on, what kind of game is this?
I think it'll be the death throes. I think it'll be the start of the death throes. I can't see it. If, you know, it's only going to get more and more safe, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Anyway, that ends the football section of our show. Music.
Baggy, baggy, boing, boing.
It's just like, I'm depressed by it all. We've got Newcastle on Saturday. And
it doesn't matter because, like you just said there, you've got the big match. You know what I mean? That's all that matters. You can see people kicking lumps.
I went to West Brom in about 1987 or something.
Yeah.
And I went to the game and I had an attaché case, leather jacket and shorts on. And I had what's the badge? What was the name of it? What was the name of that girl, Stace? The one that had a little badge of Betty Boop. That's it, Betty Boop. And the police pushed me up against the wall and goes, what's that? We'll take that. And they grabbed the Betty Boop badge. Remember that?
Yeah,
I'd done absolutely nothing. And what was funny was, on the way up there, I was going to a gig. See, I used to go to West Brom, but then I'd still go on to, say, Huddersfield to do a manners gig.
Brilliant.
Thing, and I got sat next to Barry Davis.
Oh, my God. Fantastic.
And he was really good. He was chatting. And I got out the photographs because I was carrying all Bad Manners photographs with me.
The
fan stuff. And I go, because you couldn't sign this, could you? I go, because you could put to my favourite band. He goes, I'll sign it, but I won't write that. I go, why not? He goes, because it's far from my favourite band.
People do.
I go tonight, see the album, get out, say, what, 5:15, then make my way to Derby or somewhere.
I mean, I know for a fact Terry Hall at the Specials does that, and always has done. I remember once going to see the Colourfield in Sheffield, and he was an hour late. He was an hour late on stage because he'd been to FA Cup final.
I get it, but then this has really put it into place for everybody. You know what the most important thing is? Where it's nice to have a bit of skill and a bit of passion, but the people. You're nothing. You're not going to play a gig without people there.
Nope.
You know, not unless you're just composed.
oh, come on, at least two. Come on. We've never played to less than 12.
Your lowest crowd.
12's been the lowest.
12. You don't are. I fancy a bit of Monty Python there almost.
All right, I lie. No, actually, it was 7. 7.
Theater with the selector. And Let's Go Bowling were our support band.
Yeah.
We actually opened up with 3 Minute Hero, and there was two girls standing at the bar. And it went, 3 Minute Hero! Bam, 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 bam. And these girls turned and went out. So we played to Let's Go Bowling. They were dancing around. That was
fantastic.
True. And once, Big Five, we had a gig in Brighton, and nobody came. He didn't even open the doors.
I remember watching Big Five at Bradford City, in Queen's Hall, during the week. Can you remember that?
Yeah. And I do. Yeah.
And there was only about three of us there, weren't there?
Was sparse.
Lots of room to move.
And you've got people there. And Brad, I think, was there.
Brad was there, yeah. It was fucking brilliant. Stuff,
you know. And, you know, must have been horrible for them. Never mind me. I don't care about me, but, you know. But I remember Brighton. It was a big sort of reggae ska town, and no one came. We played there about 6 months later, and it was a great gig. But I don't know why. That night, in Brighton, I think Aloha Lo was the better option or something, like, you know.
Aloha Lo.
Must have been.
Right, I think time is upon us, my young man.
Are you joking?
No. It's a Christmas.
I'll have to have my mints and tatties now.
Mints and tatties.
Sitting over there in the ball, son.
Is it in the ball, son?
Because
people don't realize you're Scottish, aren't you?
I'm nervous about doing an interview with Paul Williams.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Is it Paul Willow Williams? You have your name in the
No, it's what people call me. Normally cunt, bastard, anything.
No, I've had all that. Don't worry about that. The worst thing I ever read about myself, I think it was on YouTube.
Yes, I remember you getting
something, and it said, Nick Welsh has scar cancer. You know, but even then, people say it's shit, but don't give you why. I would just say, if you played me something, say, it's not for me.
Yeah.
You have never in your time heard me slag off a band.
Never.
Because they're all musicians, maybe
trying. Yeah, yeah.
How many times I can't tell you that I've heard a band from 1971, like 3 years ago, and I think, why didn't I like this then?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
So I wouldn't. It's just, and I'll always be on the musician's side. But yeah, no. So hopefully, right. Who knows, next May, April, June, whenever.
Get back to it.
I might be able to get out and do it again. Until then, could you say, all send money into Nick Welsh?
At paypal.me.com.
paypal.getmedrunk.com, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Right. And you, sir, thanks for joining us. And we're going to play out with King Hammond's Fuck Off Christmas, because I mean, you know.
I love the intro. That is the best intro ever.
It's one of the best ones ever, and it's just.
It feels so natural. I said, Wendy, just say whatever it was, Merry Christmas to me. Yeah. So she went to work, goes, Merry Christmas, and fuck off. Yeah. So natural, it's brilliant.
It reminds me a little bit. It reminds me a little bit.
I've got to give a big call out to Wendy, because I love Wendy.
Gosh, man, yeah.
Anyway, I bought a pie and mash for the first time, so and she loved
it. I saw the pictures, yeah.
I know how to show a girl a good
time. She only
time.
Had the one, though, didn't she?
Yeah, I usually only have one thing now, but I went double. All right, then, mate.
Right, mate, listen, thank you very much for joining us, and I wish you and your lovely family a happy Christmas.
Oh, yeah, same to you, mate.
And hopefully the new year will be much better.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. Can't get much worse, mate.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Nick Wells, thank you very much, Nick.
Yay!
Right, take care, mate. See, this is Nick Wells.
All right, mate. Take care.
Shut up.
Take care, mate.
Merry Christmas!
Fuck off!
My wife went and left me in mid-July. She packed her bags and I don't know why. The only thing that the woman said was, I hate you and I wish you were dead. That's why I'm sitting all alone, a one-man wreck in a family home. And if you look round my festive hell, you can see she took my kids as well. So fuck off Christmas, leave me alone. I just wanna get drunk on my own. Cause this has been a terrible year, so I ain't got no Christmas cheer. Yeah, no Christmas cheer. I can't work out where we went wrong. Maybe we went on too long. Now carol singers are out on the ponds, so I opened the door and said, Santa's a nonce. Yeah, fuck off Christmas, leave me alone. I just wanna get drunk on my own. Cause this has been a terrible year, so I ain't got no Christmas cheer. Yeah, fuck off Christmas, leave me alone. I just wanna get pissed on my own. Cause this has been a terrible year, I ain't got no Christmas cheer. Why don't you fuck off Christmas? Cause I've got tears in my eyes. Yeah, fuck off Christmas, I can't even watch Malcolm and Wise. You know? That's why I'm sitting all alone, a one man wreck in a family home. Take a look round my festive hell, that woman took my kids as well. So fuck off Christmas, leave me alone. I just wanna get drunk on my own. Cause this has been a terrible year, so I ain't got no Christmas cheer. Yeah, fuck off Christmas, leave me alone. I just wanna get pissed on my own. Cause this has been a terrible year, so I ain't got no Christmas cheer. Yeah, no Christmas cheer.
Scapone's Sound Off Podcast.
Get some North
Northeast Scar.